Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, and welcome to the Apologist segment of Arc Studies Live. I'm your host, Rick Young. Arc Studies Live is the blogcast radio outreach of the Apologetic Research Center. Arc is a Christian ministry specializing in evangelism, Christian apologetics, and countercult studies. For more information about Arc, go to the World Wide Web at www.arcstudies.org. Good afternoon and welcome to this Monday edition of Arc Studies Live. I'm your host, Rick Young. Okay, what we're going to be doing this week, at least for a couple of days, depending on... I just want to really make up some ground for last week. Again, got kind of sidetracked off into some other issues relating to Egypt and all these other things. And I want to make sure that I did due diligence to the scheduled subject matter, which was the examination of a nation, taking a look at the nations, plural, of Islam. Again, I am using as a guideline my perspective called The Examination of a Nation. It's found at www.arcstudies.org. Again, that's www.arcstudies.org. You can select Cult Studies from the menu tab on the left side of the page. And again, The Examination of a Nation from the index on that particular page. Okay, this perspective was written roughly 13, 14 years ago. I'd have to pull a hard copy. The copyright date is on the hard copies of it. But it was written from at the behest of individuals with the Nation of Islam who requested, individuals who I knew, we worked together, and they requested I take a look at the some books of the Nation of Islam, and they recommended all of Elijah Muhammad's written works. Okay, Friday, talked a little bit about some of the prophecy of Elijah Muhammad, and I'm basing this upon a comment that Elijah Muhammad rightfully made, I believe, on page 155 of Our Savior Has Arrived, where he said, if we are to accept a religion that is said to be from God, we should diligently examine the truth in the author of that religion, its people, and the content of its book or books, before we bear witness that it is the truth of God and the right religion. And then he goes on to say, let the so-called Negroes take a second look at the Bible. So he did write that in reference from his perspective of the Bible, but if that's a principle he held, which I believe he did, based upon what was written there, then it should be true for him as well. Also, just as a guideline, everything written concerning the Nation of Islam was written under the authority or the focus of Aristotle's dictum concerning textual criticism, which basically, and I'm summarizing here, says that the benefit of the doubt must always, while criticizing any text, and the word criticize is not a negative word. We made it a negative word. What criticize means is to critique something. You know, just like we made apologize, almost a reflexive word, when in fact it just means defense. And that's where we get our name, Apologetic Research Center. At any rate, so when critiquing the works of any work, you know, for its truthfulness or the truthfulness found in it, you know, all benefit of the doubt must be given to the work itself, all deference, unless it disqualifies itself with known factual errors, false prophecies, internal inconsistencies, and so forth and so on. And so that this is the approach that I took when I personally wrote this perspective, again, it's probably been about 13, 14 years ago. All right, if you want to join in today's broadcast, you can give me a call at area code 646 652-2905. Again, that's area code 646-652-2905. All right, if you remember, based upon that particular guideline, as illustrated by Elijah Muhammad on page 155 of Our Savior Has Arrived, what I did Friday was I went through Message to the Black Man and just looked at some, not all, some of the prophecies that Elijah Muhammad pointed out or illustrated in there, and I was able to show, because again, this the copy of Message to the Black Man, I actually have two copies of it. The older copy was published in 1965, and it was published by Muhammad's Temple, number 2, 7351, Stony Island, Chicago, Illinois. And then, of course, I have a second copy that I believe is fraudulent, though I do believe many individuals in the Nation of Islam have this second copy, and I call it fraudulent. I talked about it Friday because, you know, and I've only read one page in the newer one that was published by United Brothers Communication Systems, P.O. Box 5368, Newport News, Virginia, copyright 1992 by UB and U.S. Communication System, and let's see what distinguishes, there's a note on the inside, what distinguishes this edition of Message to the Black Man in America was written by Brother H. Khalifa. So, Brother H. Khalifa changed the prophecy of Elijah Muhammad. And I've told this story a couple of times, but just for brevity, I'll cover it again. I was talking about some of the false prophetic dates that are in Message to the Black Man, the authentic Message to the Black Man, 1914, 1965, 1966, 1955, 1970, 1973, 1974, 1975, all these, you know, prophetic things that pointed to things that did not come to pass. I mean, blatantly did not come to pass. And I was discussing it with the brother that carpooled with me. As I said, we worked at the same company. He and his wife had one vehicle at the time, so I would pick him up. We'd carpool to work, and we'd have good, vigorous discussions. I really appreciated the brother. I haven't talked to him in probably about 7 months, but the brother and I, we've been friends for years now. I have respect for him. I believe he is absolutely sincere in the things that he says. I just believe him to be sincerely wrong. I believe that I can sufficiently identify where he's sincerely wrong. At any rate, when I made reference to the prophecy about 1973-74, and I'll read it to you again, it's on page 272. Elijah says, America's falling. Her doom has come. And none, said the prophet, shall help her in the day of her downfall. In the Bible, God pleads with you to fly out of her, America, in parentheses, and seek refuge in him. And he quotes Revelations 18:4, which, of course, speaks of Mystery Babylon. And this is the part I want to emphasize. What is going to happen in 1973 and 74? It asks with a question mark. It certainly will change your minds about following a doomed people, a people who hate you and your kind and who call one who teaches the truth about them a hater. They are the producers of hatred in us. We are with God and his righteous. We are with God and the righteous, rather. Okay, and of course he's clearly talking about the white man there. But he said, what is going to happen in 1973 and 74? And what I emphasized to the brother is, I was 13, 14 in 1973-74. Nothing happened. There was nothing significant that happened in 1973 or 74 other than Frankie Beverly and Maze came out. Nothing significant. And, of course, I'm a little hyperbole. But, you know, I'm just joking a bit. But nothing. Nothing. Certainly nothing that will, as he says, it'll certainly change your minds about following white people, which in reality no one's following white people anyway. This was Elijah's thing, believing that anyone who was not with him was following white people, I guess the 85%. So anyway, when I quoted that to the brother told me, no, absolutely not. It doesn't say 1973-74, and I thought it did. And so, at any rate, when I looked at it, you know, in the copy provided for me, it didn't say 73-74. In fact, it was one of these United Brothers and Sisters Communications, copyright 1992. Let me read. Page 272. America's falling, her doom has come. Same text. It is verbatim. It's even situated on the page, typeset the exact same way. Every word on this page, with the exception of, instead of saying what is going to happen in 73 and 74, it says what is going to happen in 1965 and 66. Now, how could you make that kind of mistake, you know, and use his copyright in the front of the book? While you have your own copyright, 1992, you also have Message to the Black Man in America, copyright 1965. In the front of this book, as if it's an identical copy, when in reality, it is not. It is not. In fact, he changed. Why would he change them? Because nothing happened in 1973-74. Elijah died in 75, but nothing happened in 1973 and 74. Nothing that would make anyone take any second look at the Nation of Islam. In fact, a year after, in 1975, the Nation of Islam ceased to exist for a time and became the Belalians. And then the community of Al-Islam in the West under Wardith Houdin Muhammad or Wallace Muhammad, Elijah Muhammad's youngest son, many believe. Now, of course, there's some under Farrakhan who say that Elijah had sons by the women, and I have no idea. I know that was a bane for Malcolm and as well as for Wallace, so maybe he did, but that's not my point. My point is that this book intentionally changed what Elijah Muhammad said, and that's the only page. This book is still brand new, because let me explain to you what happened, okay? Once the brother showed me that, and I looked at it, I apologized, because I knew I was right in my overall contentions, but it really made me second guess. Did I intentionally misquote him? How could I have seen 1973 and 74? So when I got home, I broke out my copy that was published at the mosque that Elijah presided over while he was alive. Yeah, it's an old copy, and it's 1973-74, just like I thought. So I ran out to my nearest bookstore there and bought the newer copy just to make sure, and I bought it and turned to the same page. And, in fact, it was changed, 65-66. It was an intentional attempt by the publisher of this new Quran to cover up the fact that nothing happened in 1973-74. In fact, what ended up happening was that Elijah died a year later. But if you could sway people, and I would submit to you that most people, most Muslims that I've seen, that I've talked to, and I don't want to imply that all of them, but most that I've seen, their copy of Message to the Black Man, I'd say about 75% of them had this UBUS copyrighted version, which absolutely misquoted or changed, intentionally misled them, trying to cover up the fact that it was a false prophecy in there. Why 65-66? Because then you could point it back to the Watts riots. And you could say, wow, that was significant. You can watch those on, you know, they give us 1 month a year when they watch the, when they show the National Black History Month in February on PBS. They'll show the Watts riots, and you could say, wow, That certainly will change your minds about following a doomed people, people who hate you and your kind. Yeah, I can see where they can make that case with that. The problem is that that's not what Elijah wrote. Okay. All right, at any rate, so again, I went over a listing of prophecies Friday. All right, so let's take a look again at the history of the Nation of Islam, and let's take a look at it a little bit slower. If you're listening, got a question, got a comment, if you just want to shoot me an email, that's fine. You can email me at ryoung@arcstudies.org. If you don't want to talk on air, that's fine. ryoung@arcstudies.org. If you got a question and you got a comment, you want to make your comment or ask your question on air, give me a call, area code 646-652-2905. All right, let's look at the history of the Nation of Islam. All right. The Nation of Islam, nations of Islam, are without a doubt some of the fastest growing non-Christian movements in the midst of the African-American community today. Also known as Black Muslims, members of these organizations are readily identified by their crisps and disciplined mannerism as they distribute goods and literature for their respective organizations at many urban venues. I say nations of Islam because there are numerous organizations extant today that lay claim to this title in some form or another. And this list includes, but is not limited to, because these are the ones that I've found. And I haven't looked to see if there were any more offshoots. The latest one that I found was the Nation of Islam Canada. that was the latest one, and they're not affiliated. They were affiliated with the American Nation of Islam at one time, but they eventually broke off under Minister Linwood X, the late Minister Linwood X, and started their own branch. So let's take a look at them. Okay, the 5% Nation of Islam, or more popularly called the Nation of Gods and Earth. All right, the 5% Nation, or as its members call it, the Nations of Gods and Earth, was founded by Clarence Jowers Smith around 1964. Around this time, Clarence Smith became known as Clarence 13X. And rose to the rank of lieutenant in the Nation of Islam's military training unit, the Fruit of Islam, the FOI. Aside from, and what I'm reading from, and you can link to these sites from the introduction page of our perspective on the Nations of Islam. Aside from his formidable physical skills, he supposedly learned karate while overseas. Clarence 13X had a hypnotic speaking style that quickly enabled him to become the student minister of Temple Number 7, and that's in New York City. That's the one Malcolm presided over at one time, Farrakhan presided over at one time, Conrad Muhammad, who's now a Christian, from what I understand, presided over. But the Nation of Islam soon entered a period of turmoil in which Malcolm X was suspended and rumors of Muhammad's extramarital dalliances began to spread. Clarence 13X's own teachings began to stray from doctrine, and he and the nation parted ways in 1963. Less than a year later, Clarence 13X reemerged and began teaching a revised Black Muslim theology. Again, this is in 1964. He was student minister in the Seventh Temple in New York, and when he was escorted from the nation for his preaching or gambling activities, the very reason of his escorting were never to be known. He said he was God, renamed himself Allah, and started spreading his thoughts on the streets of Harlem among the youth. In his early years, the group had around 200 members. Clarence 13X built a close relationship with Mayor John Lindsay, and in 1967, they got a house in Harlem. Okay, and it was called the Allah School in Mecca. Harlem was renamed as Mecca and Brooklyn as Medina. The further relocation of Allah. Okay, understand that this is who Clarence began to call himself. And it still serves as the 5% headquarters today. Allah, as Clarence 13X now called himself, reinterpreted the Nation of Islam's set of lost found lessons, a catechism that resulted from Farr's purported conversation with Elijah Muhammad. These lessons, which every Black Muslim had to memorize, asserted that 85% of humanity is mentally dead and ignorantly destroys itself through vice and immorality, while another 10% possesses the truth but oppress the first 85% by convincing them to believe in the mystery God who cannot be seen in this lifetime. I guess those would be the Christians. The remaining 5% constitute the poor, righteous teachers who also possess the truth, namely that the living God is the Son of Man, the Supreme Being, as the Black man of Asia. And so that's why they believe themselves to be the 5%ers or the poor, righteous teachers. Elijah Muhammad had used this lesson to prove that Master Farr Muhammad, who was his teacher, was in fact God. But Clarence used it to prove that all men possess the potential to become gods themselves. In 1969, the organization's life took a huge turn when Father Allah, Clarence 13X, was killed. The crime still remains unsolved. There are different theories of who committed the crime, whether they were members of the NOI or the homicide was related to gambling. Since then, the nation doesn't have a leader. It has meetings called parliaments, which usually occur in public spaces. So that's the history of the 5% Nation of Islam under Clarence Jowers, or Clarence 13X, who became Allah until he was killed for whatever reason. All right. So that was the first sect that broke off. The next sect that broke off was the Lost Found Nation of Islam. Okay, the Lost Found Nation of Islam, according to Silas Muhammad, is dedicated to the resurrection of the dead. Not in the physical resurrection, but in the mental resurrection. Silas says that they believe that the so-called African Americans are the most in need of a mental resurrection. Okay, now, Silas Muhammad, and I'm not quite sure what his relationship was with Elijah Muhammad prior to the fall. I believe he was a lawyer. I believe that Elijah Muhammad sent him to college. As a matter of fact, let me read to you the thumbnail sketch of Mr. Muhammad from his own website. It says this, and it's by Attorney General, and I'm assuming that's Lost Found Nation of Islam Attorney General Meshaki Muhammad. He asked the question, who is this man who went to Chicago alone in August of 1977 with a declaration of spiritual war? Who is it that stood up first as the lone supporter of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad as the last messenger of Allah? What kind of man would have the courage to travel hundreds of miles in order to personally deliver the message to Imam Warith D. Muhammad that he was wrong in his treatment of his own father? His name is Silas. In order to understand his message and his position, a glimpse into his background is in order. He was born and raised in Texas, moved to Los Angeles in 1960, and was greatly inspired by the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. A man who answered many questions he had entertained during his youth about himself and black people in general. Having been stirred into action, he accepted Islam as taught by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and became a relentless worker for the Nation of Islam. He was top amongst those who were responsible for getting Muhammad Speaks newspapers into the hands of the public. In 1964, he married Harriet Muhammad, a former daughter-in-law of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. Through her, he was privileged to meet and become acquainted with the man of the hour. While still in Los Angeles, he was commissioned to manage the West Coast distribution of Muhammad Speaks. This was a labor of love for him, as he very early realized that this newspaper was the economic and spiritual backbone of the Nation of Islam. Under his guidance, Muhammad Speaks was distributed up and down the entire West Coast. In this capacity, he was able to also provide employment for many hard-working young men, thus putting Muhammad's teachings into practice. Okay, and let's see, having been invited to Chicago by Elijah Muhammad, he moved there so as to be in a better position to assist in building the multimillion-dollar nation that stood as a testimony to the bootstraps teachings of the messenger. He soon became one of the top laborers of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and while training to become the national business manager, he was given many opportunities at the end of the workday to discuss things with the messenger. At that time, he was honored but puzzled at the comment the messenger would make about him. And I'm quoting what he says that the messenger said to him, "You're more like me than any of my sons," the Honorable Elijah Muhammad would tell him. To prove his sincerity, the messenger asked him to take his last name, Muhammad, and became a part of his family. Emmanuel Muhammad, present at the time, welcomed Silas into the family, telling him that his name, Muhammad, was both a blessing and protection. Silas Muhammad was encouraged to finish his formal education and was given financial assistance by the messenger while working towards his B.A. in history and mathematics at the University of Illinois Chicago, Chicago Circle campus. During the time he was a student at the University of Illinois, he formed and trained an avant-garde group of men that were the delight of the Muslim community. These men were known for their skills in exhibition drilling and in their skills in martial arts. They served as Honorable Elijah Muhammad's bodyguards whenever he made public appearances. When his formal training was near an end, the messenger placed Silas Muhammad as captain in charge of the entire distribution of Muhammad Speaks newspaper. Dissension arose. Harriet Muhammad had been functioning for several years as the official in charge of all national financial matters. Silas Muhammad was now in charge of newspaper distribution and had influence among the avant-garde group. Muslims, as a practice, don't air their differences in public, but this information is given to you so as to provide you with an understanding of Silas Muhammad's statement in his article that he was slain spiritually. Rather than cause further dissension, rather than have the existence of Muhammad Speaks threatened by internal strife, and rather than cause the Honorable Elijah Muhammad further headache, Silas Muhammad left Chicago in order to keep peace for the sake of the messenger and the Nation of Islam. Upon returning to Los Angeles, he taught at the junior high school level while continuing to collect the tools that are provided at the graduate level of education. He was a law student at the time of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad's death in 1975. Remembering the internal strife, he watched the progress of the nation, hoping it would go well under Imam Warif D. Muhammad. However, it was not long before radical change in the nation was apparent to all. The change that had taken place amongst the Muslims in America had been drastic, to say the least. It is analogous to Baptists suddenly becoming Catholics. Both are Christians, yet they differ in their Christian beliefs. And I disagree with that statement, but that's a different show. The Nation of Islam became the world community of Islam in the West. Imam Warif D. Muhammad had abandoned the social, spiritual, and economic platform of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. All right. So, the whole point is, let me see here. All right. While the nation was in the process of changing from a butterfly back into a caterpillar, Silas had been changing from a caterpillar into a butterfly. During the past 8 years, he spent countless hours and many sleepless nights discovering self. He started to use analytical tools gathered in the study of law and apply them in an effort to examine the books held sacred by millions of people. During his quest for knowledge, he came to know through analyzing the scriptures just who he is, who the Honorable Elijah Muhammad was, and what the solution of the problem faced by blacks in America. By reading Muhammad Speaks regularly, you will come to know what that solution is. All right. And so what I'm assuming he meant by this is Silas's position is that Elijah Muhammad is the spiritual father, or I'm sorry, Master Farad Muhammad is the spiritual father, Elijah Muhammad is the spiritual mother, and that he, Silas, was the spiritual offspring. Now, I've noticed here that their mosques have dwindled. They've never been a large organization. I did know Minister Suad Diab, who was in the Youngstown, Ohio, or in Campbell, Ohio, who I met. But looking here now, I don't even see Minister Duad. I don't even see her listed in any of the, let's see, 3, 6, 9, 12. I only see 13 listed mosques for them from, let me see, Atlanta, Georgia, Cleveland, Washington, D.C. They appear to be the furthest west. They're on the west coast, Los Angeles. And, of course, Houston, Texas, Chicago. At any rate, so that's Silas Muhammad's Nation of Islam. Now, Clarence 13X believed that he became Allah. Silas believes that he is the offspring of Allah and some kind of spiritual offspring of Allah and Elijah Muhammad. All right. Now, 1977, his group was the first to break away. He did go to Chicago when Warith Uddin Muhammad began to allow Caucasians in Mas Mariam and began to disavow his father's teachings. Silas was the first to stand up, historically. He stood up and he went and declared spiritual war. Sometime after that, I believe it was like right around, it was after August, that Louis Farrakhan, having been convinced by Tineta Muhammad, who claims now to have been a wife of Elijah Muhammad, rather than a concubine, which doesn't make a difference one way or the other, but having been convinced by her and Jibril Kashmir, or Jibril, and I forget what the name of his, the Traveler, I believe, is his department in Louis Farrakhan's Nation of Islam's newspaper called The Final Call. And so I believe his name is Jibril Muhammad, but I believe it was Jibril Kashmir at that particular time. All right. Well, that Nation of Islam, they convinced him that Louis Farrakhan had been the national spokesman for Elijah Muhammad at the time of his demise. And, in fact, had gone back after his death and began he became a calypso singer again, which is what he was doing when he was found in the first place by none other than Malcolm X. But not before he had pretty much yielded to Warith Uddin Muhammad's, you know, turning of the Nation of Islam into an Orthodox organization. And for that reason, many call him the hypocrite to this day. At any rate, once he left the Nation of Islam, and when I say the Nation of Islam, actually it ceased to exist. So he didn't leave it. He went back to make a living, you know, as a performer, which is what again, he's an accomplished violinist. All right, let's take a look at the history of Louis Farrakhan. Mr. Louis Farrakhan was born May 11, 1933 in Bronx, New York, and was reared in a highly disciplined and spiritual household in Roxbury, Massachusetts. Raised by his mother as a native of St. Louis, Louis and his brother Alvin learned early the value of work, responsibility, intellectual development, and having a strong sensitivity to the plight of black people. His mother engaged her sons in conversations about the struggle for freedom. Popularly known as the Charmer, he achieved fame in Boston as a vocalist, calypso singer, dancer, and violinist. In February 1955, while visiting Chicago for a musical engagement, he was invited to attend the Nation of Islam Savior's Day convention. Although music had been his first love, within 3 months after joining the Nation of Islam in 1955, Minister Malcolm X told the New York Mosque and the new convert Louis X that Elijah Muhammad had said that all Muslims would have to get out of show business or get out of the temple. Most of the musicians left Temple No. 7, but Louis X, later renamed Louis Farrakhan, chose to dedicate his life to the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. The departure of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad in 1975 and the assumption of leadership by Wallace D. Muhammad, known as Imam Warith Uddin Muhammad, brought drastic changes to the Nation of Islam. After approximately 3 years of wrestling with these changes, and a reappraisal of the condition of black people and the value of teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, Mr. Farrakhan decided to return to the teachings and program with a proven ability to uplift and reform blacks. And I noticed here that they did skip the part where he just decided to go back. He actually left the Nation of Islam for a time. Or again, you can't say he left the Nation of Islam. It ceased to exist. And he went back to entertainment until he was encouraged by Jibril and Tineta and maybe others as well, that as the last national representative of the Nation of Islam and therefore Elijah Muhammad, he had a greater voice, even greater than Silas's, because Silas had already broke away and formed the Lost Found Nation of Islam. But he had a more authoritative voice to revamp the old teachings of the Nation of Islam. All right, the Nation of Islam under John Muhammad. John Muhammad was the younger brother of Elijah Muhammad. Now, John Muhammad died, I guess it was, let's see, it was about 2 years ago. I can't remember the exact time. There's a memorial to him on his webpage or his group's webpage, which again you can find at www.arcstudies.org, select cult studies from the left side of your menu bar, and then you'll find the links to the articles on him. On his website, his history says this: "Brothers and sisters, I am Supreme Minister John Muhammad, the blood and spiritual brother of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. I will now make myself known to all in the following, a touch of my history in the Nation of Islam." He goes on to say, "I'm the 8th son and the 13th, or as you might say, the baby of the children of Messenger Elijah Muhammad's parents. It was 5 girls that made 13 children. I was born in Cordell, Georgia, and in 1923 I came to Detroit with my mother, grandmother, and 2 brothers. I was a small boy. On 1924, I joined the Baptist Church. Late in 1930, I heard Islam as taught by Master Farid Muhammad. In 1932, the whole family had become Muslims under the guidance of Master Farid Muhammad and Messenger Elijah Muhammad. My first post or duty was as a helper at the door and as an usher. I became a teacher in the University of Islam," and he goes on and on and on. "He was permitted to the rostrum in 1933. He was treasurer in 1933 to 1934. He said he made a promise to both Master Farid Muhammad and Messenger Muhammad, as they taught me, to never ever fail to carry out the work that I've been taught by them in the Nation of Islam. He goes on to say, I've never disobeyed any of those in authority over me in the Nation of Islam set up by Master Farid Muhammad, whom Messenger Elijah Muhammad declared to the world was Allah in person who visited North America." And at any rate, so he goes on, and that's from his journal or his book called The Journal of Truth. Now, again, John Muhammad died, and I believe it was about a year and a half, maybe 2 years ago, okay, but not before founding his own temple in Detroit, Michigan. Okay, so that's Nation of Islam number 4. You have 5% Nation of Islam, Lost Found Nation of Islam, you know, and I could go on and on and on. Let's take a look at just a couple of more. The United Nation of Islam, they appear on the surface to be pretty progressive. They do have quite a bit of property out in Kansas City, although they began in Baltimore, Maryland, when Solomon Muhammad, who was a truck driver for the Nation of Islam, began to believe that he was the reincarnation of Farid Muhammad. And so he began to teach that. In fact, one thing that he did it's kind of odd is that you'll find that Solomon Muhammad, many in John Muhammad's group say, John Muhammad was tricked onto a stage with Solomon Muhammad and a guy named Joseph, whom Solomon Muhammad declared was Elijah Muhammad reincarnated. In fact, you can find a link to this on the page. You'll see a picture of John Muhammad holding hands with this individual, Joseph something or other, And the caption is, the biological brother of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, Supreme Minister John Muhammad left, was introduced to the messenger, returned, right. Now Allah's mightiest king for the first time since 1975. Now, when you read what John Muhammad has to say about that, is he was just trying to get some Muslim unity, and he had no idea that they were claiming this was his long-lost brother or his reincarnated brother. And so he basically just came up in front of the audience on a Savior's Day and took his hand. And he only found out later that they reinterpreted that as him endorsing or embracing his reincarnated brother. So that's the nation of, capital S, Islam under, that's the United Nation of Islam under Solomon Muhammad. Then you have Marvin Muhammad and the New Nation of Islam. And I had an individual email me about Marvin Muhammad after this particular series began to inform me that Marvin Muhammad likes to debate other Muslims. In fact, there is they called it a meeting between the Son of Man and Royale. Royale is what Solomon Muhammad calls himself. And what's interesting is Fard was Allah, and he was also called the Son of Man by Elijah Muhammad. But here you have Solomon Muhammad calling himself Allah and Marvin Muhammad calling himself the Son of Man. At any rate, they debated or whatever. All right, a little history on Marvin Muhammad, who they believe is the messenger of the covenant. The Son of Man, leader and teacher of the New Nation of Islam, was born November 26, 1950, in Leland, Mississippi. His parents were sharecroppers. They moved to California when the Son of Man was about 3.5 years old. He grew up in Los Angeles. Let me jump down to the meat of the story. All right, the Son of Man, with the help of brothers and sisters, followers with him, has already laid the foundation for what could be a marvelous beacon of inspiration for black communities throughout the United States and then the world. He has invested a great deal of time and money in establishing state-of-the-art facilities, acquiring land to continue the building of this new nation of Islam, and he has demonstrated sincerity and an unwavering commitment to seeing us truly independent by putting into action what he teaches. And what I find interesting about this is all of these individuals that are claiming to be the legacy of Elijah Muhammad, you know, when you read what Muslims want and what Muslims believe, you know, at some point, it just would seem that you would come to the realization, and I hate to say this, and I hate to say it, but it's a pipe dream. Elijah Muhammad said the time of the white devil was out in 1914. He said it was over in 1914. That was the end of the 6,000th year. And now here we are 92 years later, and they're still in the same predicament. So at some point you would think that they would come to terms with that. All right. Let's see. So that's Marvin Muhammad, the New Nation of Islam. And I'm not going to go into any more of these. The Nation of Islam on earth and in the universe under Melchizedek, Shabazz Allah, the Messianic Nation of Islam, Prince Messiah Omar al-Tariq, the Nation of Islam in Canada I talked about earlier, Minister Linwood X, the Mujahideen community of the Nation of Islam under Mahdi Khalif Muhammad, and then you have the Muhammad Speaks website under Minister Levi Karim. And Levi Karim at one time was with John Muhammad, I do believe, but now he serves as a facilitator or a minister of the teachings of the Elijah Muhammad in Detroit, Michigan, every Sunday, okay? So he does, but it's sort of an independent. It's not like Farrakhan's group or... I don't mean to imply that Levi Karim or Seventh Fam or Khalif Muhammad fall into the category of the other individuals I listed prior to them, because unlike them, and maybe Farrakhan, they don't claim to be in some form the Messiah or Allah or the Son of Man or, you know, the reincarnation of Allah in some form or other. They appear to be, and I said maybe Farrakhan, because Farrakhan claims to be the national representative of Elijah Muhammad, though he does not hold to Elijah Muhammad's teachings today. And I know there are many in the Nation of Islam who would dispute that. You know, I often visit a website called the Freedom Forum where they go on and on and on and they debate this. But the reality is that if you compare what Farrakhan teaches today with what Elijah Muhammad taught, you'll find that they don't resemble each other at all. In fact, I don't think that I've heard Farrakhan call Farad Muhammad Allah in at least the last 5 or 6 years. I haven't heard him at all live in like the last 3 or 4 years, but it's been probably 5 years or better since I've heard him refer, it's probably been a little bit longer than that, maybe 10 years. Or growing on 10 years, that I've heard him refer to Farad Muhammad as Allah. The last thing that I heard that was, you know, he didn't call him Allah. He said, Master Farad Muhammad prays to Allah, which of necessity, because of the subject-object distinction, would mean that one were not the other, you know, unless he wants to get spooky, as they call it. All right, and so he doesn't claim to be a reincarnation of anything, but he's not a true adherent of Elijah Muhammad's teachings. Levi Karim and, let's see, Khalif Muhammad, as well as Seventh Fam. Seventh Fam site is hardcore Elijah Muhammad. And so you have to respect that, and there are numerous independent mosques that aren't part of any of these groups who hold to Elijah Muhammad's teachings as illustrated in Message to the Black Man. Which, in all honesty, with integrity, if you're going to represent something, then that's exactly what you should do. All right. All these organizations tout amongst their achievements the ability to reform convicted felons, their success in reforming drug addicts and thieves, as well as other social outcasts. And you know what? I admire that, too. I do. I mean, a lot of people go to prison and join up with the Nation of Islam. Some people say it's for protection, but I think, for the most part, it may be discipline. You know, I spent 6 years in the Marine Corps because I loved the snap and pop. That's the Marine Corps discipline is what drew me, even though I took the test for the Air Force. And so I could see. I mean, many of you have seen old Public Enemy with Professor Griff and his boys back there, snap and pop, or if you've seen an FOI perform a drill. I think they do a fantastic job. You know, and that's fine, but I mean, so what? You know, that, as it pertains to spiritual things, that really doesn't matter. I mean, I grew up in drill teams that had nothing to do with any religious function. They were all as much snap and pop as they were. So if that's the draw, then that'll surely leave anyone seeking, you know, a respite for their soul, leave them wanting. I admire the fact that they do reform individuals. They do reform outcasts who end up in prison, and for whatever reason, some have said they join for protection as they get in prison, whatever the reason that they come, I admire the fact that they do that. But you know what? God, or the Christian God, does not call for us to be reformed. In fact, he says this, I beseech you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God, which is your reasonable service, or which is the logical thing to do. The Greek word is logikos. And do not be conformed to this world, but be you transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is good and acceptable and the perfect will of God. Okay, and so the whole point being made there is your focus should not be on the external man or what it looks like to everybody else. Your focus should be on the internal man, or what I call the private man. I once saw a house, and it's a true story, had beautiful tulips outside the house. I remember riding by and I admired how beautiful they were. Every day. You know, I don't care how hot it was. Seemed like they never died off. And you know what? I would just admire them. You know, until fall came around and she still had tulips. And I was like, you know what? Something's wrong in the camp. Got our first little snow there. Tulips still out there. So one day, just for the heck of it, I, you know, stopped my car, got over there, went and looked, and there were some beautifully woven silk tulips, or whatever they were made out of. The point is that they look good, but you know what? As the seasons changed, they were revealed for what they truly were. So, you know, they never had a root. They just look good. Well, that's the difference between the public and the private man. You know, the public man focuses on the external, what everyone can see. And I believe that's what every religion on the planet, Nation of Islam included, tends to focus on. And sad to say, Christian churches tend to do it now. They focus on the public man, and there's no focus at all on the private man, not realizing that, you know what, I can take a pear tree and pull all the pears off of it. All I want, I can attach beautiful, beautiful Granny Smith apples to it. You know what? And it'll look like a beautiful apple tree. When people walk by, people may even pull an apple off and be like, wow, this fruit is tasty. But ultimately, if you observe it long enough, the fruit is going to rot and die because it's not supported by the root. And given time, that tree is going to grow pears again because it's a pear tree. My point is that if you focus on the public man, it's like doing the exact same thing. You have to focus on a root. If I want an apple tree, then that's what I have to plant. And I have to cultivate the roots, and then what breaks ground is truly a healthy apple tree, through and through. You pull all the apples off, it's going to continue to sprout apples. It's not going to sprout anything else or have grafted fruit, you know, wither up and die and rot on the branches. It's not going to happen. And so, you know, while I admire the fact that you want to reform people, well, Alcoholics Anonymous reforms people. And sad to say, so does some Christian churches, focuses on reformation. But God called us to be transformed, not reformed. Transformation takes place below the ground level, at the root level. It's not just trying to make you look better. It's trying to make you focus better. All right. Even more important than these things, these groups provide a bully pulpit for the disenchanted amongst the African-American community. And that's primarily, Silas Muhammad is probably the most functional as far as focusing on substantive issues. And I know Farrakhan's faction would differ with that or disagree with that, but Silas Muhammad's group has been at the UN fighting for reparations, and this has been going on for a couple of decades now. You know, you can say they're not making any progress or whatever you want to say, but at least they're out there fighting it. What I find with Louis Farrakhan's group of the Nation of Islam is it's basically rhetoric, and I'm not trying to be disrespectful to them, but it is. It's a lot of rhetoric. I find that most of their people spend all their time defending Farrakhan. That's their mission, to defend Farrakhan and his inner circle. The rest of them, Solomon, Marvin, it seemed like that their entire, and again, I am setting aside the Mujahideen Community, the Nation of Islam, Mama Speaks website, and the Nation of Islam Settlement Number 1. Again, they don't fall in this category because I do, from what I see at least, they appear to be, you know, independent groups that are focused on Elijah Muhammad's teachings and trying to benefit from Elijah Muhammad's teachings or put those teachings to beneficial use in the community, whatever level of success they may be having. And the same could probably be said about the Nation of Islam of Canada. But the rest of them basically all seem to be heralds of whoever the leader of it is. You know, Messianic Nation of Islam heralds Prince Messiah Omar al-Tariq. And Nation of Islam on Earth and the Universe heralds Melchizedek, Shabazz, Allah, and so forth and so on. All right. The purpose of these segments, as I said last week, or week before last, before I got sidetracked, is to inform the Christian community at large of the doctrine and tenets of the original Nation of Islam as taught by its chief apostle, Elijah Muhammad. Excuse me. Although many of the black Muslim leaders today vary in their current interpretation of Elijah's doctrines in order to justify their leadership, they're all in agreement as to the divinity, supremacy, accuracy, and foundational nature of the doctrine that Mr. Muhammad taught. And I would say that they all do agree with that, with maybe the exception of Clarence 13X and the 5% Nation of Islam. Again, they kind of went esoteric. And so I think they all would agree that Elijah Muhammad was the messenger. Some have just used that as a springboard to kind of leap all off into something else. All right. But because they all can agree, for the most part, with the exception of 5%ers, who do give Elijah some respect, but they do believe that Clarence 13X esoteric renderings of what Elijah taught were better suited for their religious service. But because most accept Elijah's works, okay, that is what I'm focused on with this perspective. You know, again, I'm not trying to trail any of these groups out into what they believe to prove them wrong. The reason why I speak of Elijah, again, is because Elijah said things about the Christian church that I'd like to address. And because he said things about the Christian church, that, you know, I want to look at the evidence that he has. Okay, and that's what I've done in this perspective. And unlike the route that I went last time, I also want to take a look at some other things that Elijah said, just, you know, some notes that he has in his books that I find absolutely perplexing. For instance, when Elijah makes the point that Allah created his brain first, and then he created everything else because he needed his brain to think about everything else. And I don't mean to snicker about that, but I mean, I do just find that to be odd. How do you know you need a brain? How would one know that he needed a brain to create something else without a brain? And so those are some of the things that have come up as far as the teachings of Elijah Muhammad are concerned. So as we move into the doctrinal portion, we're going to take a brief look at the history tomorrow again, and then we're going to move into the doctrinal portion. And during that portion, I just have a couple of questions, a couple of things I want to throw out there. I know it's been kind of tedious today, but I want to lay a good foundation so that we can move forward and build upon it over the next couple of days. All right. So tomorrow we're going to take it up, as I said, looking at the history of the Nation of Islam. So until then, if you'd like to give me a question, a comment, you agree with what I say or disagree, shoot me an email, ryoung@arcstudies.org, ryoung@arcstudies.org. Or if you like, you can give me a call tomorrow at area code 646-652-2905. Until then, this is Rick Young, the apologist. I'll see you next time.
Thank you for joining me for today's edition of Ark Studies Live. I'm Rick Young. The Apologist segment focuses exclusively on addressing your questions and comments concerning hardcore doctrinal issues relating to biblical difficulties, countercult studies, and Christian apologetics. For more information about Ark, go to the World Wide Web at www.arcstudies.org. Again, that's www.arcstudies.org.